Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
God gave me a Ferrari because I am a Ferrari. You're a Ferrari too.
When God made you, he had all the options put on. You are fully loaded and totally equipped.
So do this with me.
Where did we ever come up with the style of preaching we have today? There is some entertaining preaching, but not convicting preaching, and the legacy has been tragic.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
He who defines the terms wins. This is Wretched Radio. Perhaps you've been hearing some new terms bandied about in our current cultural civil war. Terms like critical theory or critical race theory, social justice, identity politics, black liberation theology. And these are terms that are winning the day. The question is, what do they mean? And are they biblical? Let us try to understand the language du jour, which is also the language of the day, terminology that is being used everywhere, and it is assumed to be correct. If we can identify the language that is being used and rightly define it as our current culture is defining it, then we can lay our Bibles next to it to see, are these good ideas? Are these things that we should be bringing into the church? That is our singular concern. At issue is not whether or not there is social injustice. We are not at this moment, we are not concerned with anything that anybody is saying about their experience. We'll do that another time, but not right now. This is singular. What is the meaning of critical theory? To understand critical theory is to understand what's going on in our culture. To understand the word social justice is to understand why it is that so many conversations just go flying right by one another. I do believe it was the great theologian, was it Antigo Montoya? What was the guy in Princess Bride? Antigo Montoya. You keep using that word. I do not believe that it means what you think it means. So let us see if we can discover the meaning of critical theory, social justice, and are they compatible with the Bible? This is the most important issue for the Christian. This is it. This is the biggie. This is bigger than anything that is happening on the news. What is going on inside of our churches? Are these terms biblical? So if you're going to tough through this and listen to this with us, please note, this is not any sort of commentary on anything that is happening in the world. This is a conversation about terms and aligning them with the Bible to see if they match or don't. To help us do that is a fellow that I just discovered, courtesy of my buddy out in California in Riverside. Just a wonderful, godly man who's trying to figure this out in the context of his local church. Milton Vincent sent this to me and said, you might want to give this a listen. We found it pretty helpful. And indeed it is. It's Dr. Neil Shenvey. I'd never heard of the fellow before. He is a theologian, but more than that, he's a smart guy. I grew up in Delaware and attended Princeton University as an undergraduate, where I worked on high-dimensional functions approximation with Professor Herschel Rabbits. I became a Christian in Berkeley, California, where I did my PhD in theoretical chemistry at UC with Professor Birgitta Whaley. The subject of my PhD dissertation was quantum computation, including topics in quantum random walks, cavity quantum electrodynamics, spin physics, and the N representability problem. From 2005 to 2010, I worked as a postdoctoral associate with Professor John Tully at Yale, where I did research into some dynamics, electron transfer, and surface science. I moved to Durham in 2010 to do research in non-diabatic dynamics and electronic structure theory at Duke University. That's Dr. Neil Shenvey. Is his concern political? No, Is his concern economics? No. Is his concern social structures? No. His singular concern is theology. And are the terms being used today compatible with biblical Christianity?
So next, what is critical theory? Critical theory is a set of beliefs or ideas that is foundational to many different disciplines within the humanities. Gender studies, cultural studies, critical race theory, critical pedagogy, feminist studies, anthropology, literary criticism. It's also the ideology at the heart of large segments of the social justice movement. Like any broad philosophical movement, critical theory can be hard to define. So rather than focusing on its historical origins, I think a better approach is to identify the set of basic principles shared by most modern critical theorists. So what are these basic premises? I'll identify six, three major ones and three minor ones. In this section, I'll explain each belief and illustrate it with a quote or two, but then I want to provide an example of how we see these ideas at work in popular culture. I'm hoping that you'll realize how pervasive these ideas actually are. You see them all the time in movies, in music, on social media, on the news, and in lecture halls all over the country. So first, critical theory insists that our individual identity, who we are as individuals, is inseparable from our group identity. In particular, our individual identity depends on whether we are part of a dominant oppressor group or a subordinate oppressed group with respect to a given identity marker like race, class, gender, physical ability, or age. For example, Peggy McIntosh on the screen here, who popularized the phrase white privilege in a seminal 1988 paper, writes, "My schooling gave me no training in seeing myself as an oppressor." In other words, she was an oppressor, but she didn't know it. "I was taught, wrongly, to see myself as an individual whose moral state depended on her individual moral will." According to critical theory, it's not possible for you to say, "Okay, I understand that there are racist white people out there. I'm not denying that, but that's not me. I should be treated as an individual, not just as part of a group." Critical theorists deny that you can understand your identity apart from your membership in a dominant group. How do we see this claim emerge in practice? Here's an interesting example. A few weeks ago, I entered the phrases "old white male" and "entitled white male" into the search box of Twitter. I don't recommend doing that. Here are some of the results, all from people with thousands or hundreds of thousands of followers. There are two observations to make. First, notice how individual men like Ted Cruz or other senators are treated as a single monolithic demographic group. The tweets don't complain that Ted Cruz will say anything. Instead, they complain that old white men like Ted Cruz will say anything. Or look at the exchange between Cher and Rosie O'Donnell about the possibility of a Biden-Beto presidential ticket in 2020. Why does O'Donnell reject Joe Biden as a candidate? She says, "No more old white men." It's not who Biden is as an individual that matters, it's the identity group to which he belongs. Individual identity is inseparable from group identity. Second observation, try substituting any other demographic group for white men here. Could you imagine how much greater the outrage would be if a college professor like Christine Fair fantasized openly about the miserable deaths of old Asian women or poor Hispanics? What's the difference? The difference arises from power dynamics. It's not socially acceptable in most settings to mock or deride old white these other groups because they're not dominant oppressor groups. On the other hand, it's not problematic to mock or deride old white men because they're an oppressor group. Next, premise two. Oppressor groups subjugate oppressed groups to the exercise of hegemonic power. Hegemonic power is the ability to impose your group's values, expectations, and norms on the rest of society. In this way, hegemonic power is distinguished from money or influence or mere numbers. Listen to Sensue and D'Angelo. "In any relationship between groups that define one another, men, women, able-bodied, disabled, young, old, the dominant group is the group that is valued more highly. Dominant groups set the norms by which the minoritized group is judged." Given this premise, we can see why men, or whites, or heterosexuals, or the rich, are classified as oppressors, When critical theorists make this claim, they are not necessarily saying that all men or all whites or all heterosexuals engage in prolonged or cruel unjust treatment or control. That would be the dictionary definition of oppression. That's not the definition that critical theorists are using. Instead, they're arguing that these dominant groups, as groups, have imposed their values on society. That's why they can say that a man is an oppressor, even if he has never treated a woman cruelly or unkindly in his entire life. It also explains why power has nothing to do with numerical size. For instance, only 31% of the U.S. population is white and male, and only half of that group are older than 45. Yet old white men are regarded as the canonical dominant oppressor group, despite being only a small fraction of the U.S. population.
That is Dr. Neil Shenvey trying to help us understand critical race theory or critical theory. This is somewhat academic, but believe me, you hear this on the street constantly and increasingly in the churches. Our singular question is critical theory, rightly defined and understood, compatible with biblical Christianity? We'll continue to tackle that next on Wretched Radio.
Thanks very much for joining us today. We do always appreciate that you choose to spend part of your day listening to Wretched Radio. If you need more Wretched, might I suggest Wretched TV? It's a 30-minute TV program. You probably already knew that. It's hosted by Todd, and you'll find witnessing encounters, discussions on tough theological issues, and discussions on the various timely topics of the day wandering through the Christian community. Wretched TV. Check your local listings, or anytime, day or night, go to wretched.org/TV for complete episodes. Wretched.org/TV. And yes, it is absolutely free. Made possible by our gospel partners. So if you are a gospel partner, thank you very much for your generosity, allowing Wretched to, well, be wretched. If you're not a gospel partner, would you prayerfully consider becoming one today? Go to wretched.org/donate for all the details. Wretched.org/donate to become a gospel partner. Wretched. Amazing grace. Amazing gospel.
Perhaps you're thinking to yourself, self, when Friel encourages us to support preborn at preborn.org/wretched by providing as many ultrasounds as possible for women who are experiencing a crisis pregnancy for just $28 per ultrasound, it feels so financial, so cold, so detached. So permit me to personalize my plea.
Hi, my name is Isabella.
Hi, my name is Victoria.
We are 6 years old. Thank you for helping us.
A $28 ultrasound. Two lives saved. This isn't just about $28. This is about real human beings. Mommies see that it's a baby in their tummy. They hear the gospel. Daddy hears the gospel. Babies are saved. Souls are getting saved. Please consider supporting Preborn with as many ultrasounds as you can. Preborn.org/wretched.
Since Poetry Open Mic Night's been canceled, I thought I'd read you some wretched poems I've been working on. Become a gospel partner. That would be a delight. All you have to do is visit our website. Become a gospel partner. You'd be supporting this ministry if you'll just give to us financially. Become a gospel partner. Visit wretched.org/donate, or else we make you redo grade 8. Okay, listen, I never promised you'd be great, Wretched Poetry. After all, open mic night was canceled. But would you still please consider becoming a gospel partner? Every dollar you give helps Wretched continue to spread the gospel. But without our gospel partners, well, honestly, there is no Wretched. If you're already a gospel partner, thank you. Please know we are very grateful. And if you're not, visit wretched.org/donate and prayerfully consider becoming a Wretched monthly gospel partner today. Visit wretched.org/donate. Here's your invitation to support SOS Ministries. They want to see a God-fearing, gospel-proclaiming church rise up across Uganda and impact the whole of Ugandan society. SOS Ministries hopes to accomplish all of this with community outreach, Legacy Christian Academy, the Ministry of Church Strengthening, and the Shepherd's Training Center to thoroughly equip indigenous pastors. So would you consider supporting SOS Ministries? Go to sosministries.com. sosministries.com.
Attributes of God. The Bible tells us of God's faithfulness. Since God is truth, He has no desire to break His promises. Since He is omnipotent, nothing can cause Him to break promises. Since His promises are based on His eternal plan, God will always keep them. Scripture called God a rock, a fortress, and a bulwark, never failing because He is faithful. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Our concern? Theology. This is Wretched Radio. Dr. Neil Shenvey, smart guy, chemist, theologian, explaining what these terms that are being used in our current culture actually mean, and then identifying whether or not they are compatible with biblical Christianity and should or should not be welcomed into the church. That is our concern. Not about social issues, not about racism in our culture. Defining the worldview known as critical theory and social justice to ask, does the Bible affirm these ideals? Number one, critical theory. You are identified as a group, not as a person. Number two, critical theory is all about hegemonic oppression. There's an oppressor group, there's an oppressed group. You do not have to be the majority in population. You need to be the one with the power. Therefore, you are the oppressor. Those are the first two markers of critical theory.
Premise three, our fundamental moral duty is freeing groups from oppression. Here's feminist Suzanne Farr. These political times call for renewed dialogue about and commitment to the politics of liberation. Liberation requires a struggle against discrimination based on race, class, gender, sexual identity, ableism, and age. She's writing that in 1996, by the way, in the middle of the Clinton presidency. Unsurprisingly, the sentiments were amplified just a little by Trump's election. What are the implications of this commitment? Notice that liberating groups from oppression is our fundamental moral duty. It's very rare for proponents of critical theory to explicitly affirm or promote moral duties like honesty, kindness, patience, chastity, marital fidelity, or self-control. Even when they talk about money, the duties of personal charity, personal generosity, and personal giving are rarely discussed. Instead, the discourse centers on dismantling unjust structures. This focus on group liberation can have serious implications.
Before we get to those implications, consider what he just said. The focus of critical theory is freeing the oppressed, not individual kindness, not charitable giving, not acts of charity. Nope, just freeing the oppressor. Question, is that compatible with biblical Christianity? You would say, well, of course we should try to free the oppressor, and I would agree, but not at the exclusion of everything else. Furthermore, if that is the centerpiece of what it means to be human, freeing the oppressor, is that the message of the gospel? And so if social justice and critical theory become a part of the gospel, it's actually at odds with the gospel that Jesus died for sinners to set them free from condemnation, the wrath that is to come. Critical theory on this point alone is not in alignment with biblical Christianity. The implications?
One example of liberation displacing all other moral concerns can be seen in groups like Antifa. 2 years ago, a member of Antifa hit a Trump supporter in the head with a bike lock, not because he was doing anything violent, he was just talking, but because he was a Trump supporter. Amazingly, the man who committed the assault had taught ethics at a local university. Here, even the moral imperatives like, you shouldn't hit people on the head with bike locks, are considered to be less important than abstract goals like resisting oppression. Now, obviously.
Hold on before obviously. That's pragmatism. Because the highest ideal is freeing the oppressor, I can hit somebody in the head with a bike lock. Does that sound like Christianity to you?
Antifa is an extreme example, but it shows this principle at work in practice. Number four. Lived experience is more important than objective evidence in understanding oppression. Listen to Anderson and Collins. The idea that objectivity is best reached only through rational thought is a specifically Western and masculine way of thinking, one that we will challenge throughout this book. Now, what do they propose to supplement rational thought? Story, narrative, personal testimony, lived experience. Furthermore, because lived experience outweighs evidence, people from oppressed groups have special insight into truth that is fundamentally inaccessible to people from oppressor groups. If you're not a member of an oppressed group, you're expected to listen and learn from oppressed people. You are not permitted to challenge their claims.
Question: how is the Bible written? How are we to learn what is right or wrong? It's through didactic teaching. It's just nothing. But God is the author. Submit and obey. Critical theory? No. We learn from stories and anecdotes. Question: I'm not questioning anybody's story or anecdote. What I'm questioning is that how the Bible approaches and addresses the subject of learning what is morally correct?
We can see this premise at work in the abortion debate. It's common for men who attempt to discuss abortion to be told, no uterus, no opinion. You can even buy t-shirts emblazoned with that slogan. Why? One reason is that a man, as an oppressor, can't understand the lived experience of women who are oppressed. Therefore, he should have no opinion on what are considered to be women's issues. As an oppressor, he must defer to the opinion of the oppressed group.
Question: is that how we determine what is right or wrong? Based on your experience, based on your gender, or is it based on God's word? Critical theory, the former. Christianity, the latter.
Number 5. Oppressor groups hide their oppression under the guise, the pretense of objectivity. The claim being made here is that there are no completely neutral observers who present us with totally objective facts. Instead, oppressor groups claim that their observations are neutral, but this claim is only a strategy to conceal their will to dominate. Now, one might think this premise would be limited to controversial claims about politics or psychology, but some critical theorists are willing to take this claim to an extreme conclusion. For example, the abstract of a recent paper on feminist glaciology, that's the study of glaciers, argues that science can be gendered, and that feminist glaciology framework generates robust analysis of gender, power, and epistemologies in dynamic social ecological systems, thereby leading to more just and equitable science and human ice interactions. I know that sounds like a hoax, but it's a legitimate peer-reviewed paper. It's not part of SoCal Squared, if you think that's what it is, written by a sincere author, and it's fully consistent with the view of human knowledge put forward by critical theorists. Number 6. Individuals at the intersection of different oppressed groups experience oppression in a unique way. Here's a quote from the authors of an influential textbook on critical race theory. Imagine a black woman who may be a single working mother. She experiences potentially not only multiple forms of oppression, but ones unique to her and to others like her. The authors here are expressing the concept of intersectionality, the idea that our identities interact in complicated ways. Where do we see intersectionality? Here are two photos from the Women's March in 2017. That first sign on the left provides a good example of intersectionality. On the one hand, women of all color can find solidarity in their common experience of male oppression. But not so fast. The woman with the sign points out that a majority of white women voted for Trump. Even at an avowedly anti-Trump event that was organized to protest his election, race and gender intersect in complicated ways so that shared gender is not enough of a basis for solidarity. As the second sign declares, feminism without intersectionality is just white supremacy. Women of color will not necessarily have the same concerns as white women, so any feminist coalition needs to avoid centering the concerns of the dominant group. Hope I've convinced you that critical theory helps to explain many phenomena. If we understand it, we can understand a lot of what's happening in our culture, in the secular social justice movement, in academia, and in our politics.
That is why we hear so much of the language that we currently do. 6 basic premises of critical theory. you are identified not as an individual, but by a group. So if you happen to be in a group that the culture has said is bad, you're bad, whether you've done something bad or not. If you are identified with an oppressor group, you're an oppressor. If you're identified with a racist group, you are racist, because it is not about individualism. It is about an identification group. Second, hegemonic oppression. If the whole context of how the world is seen is oppressed and oppressor. Third, freeing the oppressed is the highest ideal, which is pragmatism, which isn't biblical. Number four, forget reason, forget science, forget logic, story. Number five, you hide your oppression. You say that you don't have it because you just want to keep your power under the guise of, I'm just trying to be objective or biblical. And finally, intersectionality. You're more oppressed than others if you have more oppressed traits than other people. That's critical theory. I'm not judging anything in culture, but critical theory. Question, is it biblical? Is it in alignment with Christianity? That is the question before we import it into our church. This is Wretched Radio.
If you're like most people, you have a passion to see souls saved, but don't know where to start. Might I suggest Hearts for the Lost? They assist local pastors and church congregations by helping them equip the saints with biblical principles for personal evangelism. They fly out to your church, put on an evangelism seminar, and then go out into the streets with you to put it into practice. And it's all free. To learn more or to schedule a conference, go to heartsforthelost.com. Heartsforthelost.com. This is Wretched Radio. Hi, I'm Tony Verchenis. Tennessee's governor is pledging to sign a recently passed bill that bans abortions when a fetal heartbeat is detected, also prohibits abortions based on sex, race, or a Down syndrome diagnosis. The legislation, House Bill 2263, Senate Bill 2196, passed the Tennessee House of Reps quite easily, 70-20, the Senate even easier, 23-5. It now awaits action by Governor Bill Lee, a Republican who championed the bill earlier this year and confirmed it in a tweet that he will sign it. He also thanked legislators who promoted it. In the tweet, Governor Lee wrote, "One of the most important things we can do to be pro-family is to protect the rights of the most valuable in our state, and there is none more valuable than the unborn. We have passed the strongest pro-life law in our state's history. The bill makes it a crime to perform an abortion upon a pregnant woman whose unborn child has a fetal heartbeat, according to the bill's summary. A heartbeat can be detected as early as 6 weeks into pregnancy. The bill prohibits doctors from performing an abortion if the woman seeking the abortion is doing so because of a baby's sex, race, or prenatal diagnosis indicating the child may have Down syndrome. The bill says the pregnant woman is not guilty of a crime if an illegal abortion is performed. Further, the bill requires that doctors tell a woman undergoing a chemical abortion that it may be possible to reverse the process if she changes her mind, although time is of the essence." To no one's surprise, the American Civil Liberties Union filed a lawsuit last week seeking to have that bill struck down before it even goes into effect. A recently rescinded Obama-era rule that defined sex as including gender identity also incorporated a reference to abortion that threatened the conscience rights of healthcare workers, like Kathy DiCarlo. A hospital in New York City forced her to participate in an abortion in 2009 by sorting through the baby's bloody remains after the procedure. DiCarlo initially thought she would be helping with a follow-up procedure to a miscarriage, but her bosses instead asked her to assist with the abortion of a baby at 22 weeks gestation. Helping the abortionist violated her conscience, but she complied when her supervisor threatened to charge her with insubordination and abandoning her patient if she didn't help. DiCarlo said she still has nightmares about that day. The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services June 12th finalized a regulatory change designed to prevent similar violations. As a part of the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare to you and me, the previous administration enacted a rule that discrimination on the basis of sex could mean on the basis of gender identity or termination of pregnancy. I don't know how that leap is made. The rule immediately faced court challenges and never took effect. Since providers use similar procedures and equipment to treat miscarriages and perform abortions, the regulation could have forced any health insurance that covered costs related to one to pay for the other. The Trump administration's revision removes those extra definitions of sex and protects federally funded pro-life health care providers who object to abortion. More Wretched Radio is straight ahead. I'm Tony Verkennis.
Know your church fathers. Hippolytus was perhaps the most important theologian of the 3rd century. He wrote a 10-volume book called Refutation of All Heresies, which catalogued and criticised hundreds of pagan philosophies, Gnostic teachings, and Christian heresies. Hippolytus was exiled and died a martyr under the Roman Empire. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
The thrill of victory and the agony of defeat.
Spanning the globe. Because you've been sending a lot of stories to idea@wretched.org. And, well, I don't really have a place for them except to string them together and to try to come up with something that indicates perhaps there was some planning put into this program.
Clever.
We're calling this Wide World of Christian Stories.
Yep.
Honesty. This is Wretched Radio. Religious persecution is... Was that too honest? Maybe I should try a little discretion. You know, discretion is okay. Just because a pastor yells at you, demanding that you speak out on issues that perhaps you're not prepared to speak out on, it doesn't mean that you have to. Sometimes discretion says, no thanks, yelling pastor.
Look what
I'm just
going to
wait a little bit.
Clever. That's why you're the host.
Religious persecution is engulfing the world. Please remember, there is a rule to this Christian involvement business. There are a gazillion things that you can concern yourself with. There is a never-ending list of atrocities, of ill treatment, of criminal acts. The question is, which ones are you going to engage in? And the answer is, that's up to you. Not up to me. It's up to you. Where's your heart? Where is your zip code? Where are your passions? Where is your influence? Get involved in that. And don't let anybody critique you for not. Would you say to somebody, you know that little shelter that you've got in the basement of the church that you open up every Tuesday for people in the community to come and get clothes for their kids? Or perhaps Enfamil for their children? No. That's not my issue. Shut it down and get involved. What's the matter with you? I don't get you. We shouldn't be talking to each other like that, should we? My thing is my thing. Your thing is your thing. And that's how the body works. That is how so many injustices on this planet are indeed dealt with, that there's Christians with different interests that have the ability to engage and do something. And that, by the way, is another consideration. You need to be able to do something. When somebody says, you need to get involved, you need to care about my issue. Okay, tell me why, and then tell me how. Because if you can't get a clear how, then perhaps it's time to just sit and wait and watch a little bit until some sort of strategy is formulated. Then you can engage. My thing is my thing. Your thing is your thing. Here's my promise. I won't make my thing your thing if you could please return the favor. And we shouldn't be doing that to each other. Should we close down the Christians who are striving to save babies? They're going out to that abortuary every week, trying to preach the gospel, trying to counsel women, plead with them, don't take the life of your baby. No. You've got to care about my issue. Nope. That's not the way it works. You can encourage, you can try to persuade, but don't make a law where there is no law. Religious persecution is engulfing the world. Believers in many countries face severe challenges, according to the State Department's annual report on international religious freedom. And that's why you need to support a Tomorrow Club, because there's persecution going on right now in Eastern Europe. And if you don't do something about it, I don't know what's the matter with you. I'm so sorry. I was doing the very thing that I said that we're not supposed to be doing. That's what I'm hearing these days a lot. Not that it's a bad idea to support a Tomorrow Club. You can do that at tomorrowclub.org/wretched. $30 a month. It supports the Tomorrow Club in Eastern Europe. It's an outstanding ministry, and I encourage you to support it because, Christians, it's a tough go in Eastern Europe. The Orthodox Church, they work very, very hard to try to shut down Christian activity. They work very hard to try to intimidate the Protestants. And yet, Tomorrow Clubs, they labor on, and I would encourage you to support them. Their kids are getting saved. Their families are getting saved. Local churches, they're coming back to life all over Eastern Europe. It's an outstanding ministry. $30 a month, 30 little disciples. It's truly just profoundly excellent ministry. I encourage you. I can't tell you and shame you for not doing it. That's not how we treat one another. And that's not biblical. There are a gazillion issues. Encourage, exhort, plead even. Don't yell at other Christians for not getting involved. TomorrowClubs.org/wretched now.
Attaboy.
I backslid. Okay.
It was a good try.
I backslid a little bit.
You tried hard. Almost got there.
Religious persecution, it's going on in China, violence in Africa, Pakistan. Just an encouragement. Please be praying for your brothers and sisters. It's a dangerous, dangerous world. Please. In the meantime, in Great Britain, I did not know that this wasn't already on the books. The UK House of Commons, no-fault divorce bill passes. I would have assumed that was the case now for years. It has been in this country.
We've had that forever.
Thank you, Richard Nixon.
Look how it's helped.
Since the 70s. Currently, a divorcing spouse must prove, quote, the irretrievable breakdown of the marriage. But the government wants to remove this need. Irretrievable breakdown. I'm not even sure I buy that term. What does that mean exactly, irretrievable breakdown? Oh, I know. Okay. I'm using this, but then I probably shouldn't because then I'm using the thing with it. So I won't mention that it was Sean Hannity was reading that he got a divorce. I did not know that. Did you?
I did not.
That Sean Hannity has been divorced, I believe, for at least a year now. I did not know that. And I read the very same thing that you so often read with celebrities. We're still the best of friends, and we're doing everything we can to be harmonious parents raising up our children.
Then why are you divorced?
Because of no-fault divorce.
And we're back.
That's why. Planned Parenthood, here's a shocker, endorsing Joe Biden. Get ready for this. This would be, if it's not the quote du jour, it's definitely the quote of the day. It's a life or death election. Yes, Planned Parenthood, I would agree with that totally. Joe Biden promises to expand access to abortion if elected, stating that he is proud to stand with Planned Parenthood. Quote, it is a simple proposition. Healthcare is a right. Not dependent on race, gender, income, or zip code. As president, I'm going to do everything in my power to expand access to quality, affordable abortion for women, especially women of color. And there's more of that identity business. You're a group. Everything is a group. Have you noticed that? I'm trying to recall who I heard say this. Maybe it was Neil Shenvey. And by the way, we'll play the rest of Neil Shenvey tomorrow, I believe, as he tries to explain and define what critical theory and social justice and intersectionality are and if they are compatible with the Bible. Notice when they do polling, what groups are favoring Joe Biden? If you are an individual, maybe it was Vody Bakum I heard talking about the subject, it's all about grouping people together. It's not individualism. It's all identity, your group that you get lumped into. That's who you are. And that's why we want to know how suburban housewives are trending for Joe Biden or Donald Trump. We want to know how the millennials are trending. How did senior citizens vote? How did white people vote? How did black people vote? It's all critical theory right there. He also, Joe Biden, vowed to reverse the so-called gag rule prohibiting family planning facilities receiving federal funding under Title 10. Cool. More abortions. That cannot be overlooked. The slaughter of over a million babies a year, nothing compares. Nothing even comes close. Honestly, I don't know how hard that is. Cartoon Network is going to be celebrating, no, they are celebrating Pride Month with videos of youth LGBTQ activists. Cool. Mom and Dad, can't turn on that TV without messages making their way into the kids' eyeballs and earballs, so be careful. Cartoon, by the way, it is LGBTQA+. I learned this from Vody. LGBTQ, that's lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, allies, plus anybody else who didn't get included in the acronym. So it literally is LGBTQA+. It's not being cheeky. That's just to make sure. If you didn't get an initial, don't worry. If you're on our side, you're an ally, then we are for you. And they are being promoted on Cartoon Network.
Of course.
But in the meantime, is it true? Did Paw Patrol actually get canceled? Did that happen? Or was that just kind of an internet
rumor? One can hope.
Hey, whether it's true or not, it sure does seem plausible these days as the foundations crumble. This is Wretched Radio. And in the meantime, while we in the West are still experiencing struggles and challenges courtesy of COVID in Eastern Europe, the effects have been even more profound. Nevertheless, Tomorrow Club's continuing their great ministry work in European countries.
Right now, Tomorrow Club leaders are putting together more than 2,000 care packages to deliver to the neediest families in the towns and villages we serve. The packages will provide enough food for a couple of weeks, basic food items like buckwheat, macaroni, rice, canned meat, oil. There's even a package of candies for the kids and, in some places, seeds for the garden. And because most of these packages will be going to unbelieving families, along with the food items, there'll be a simple gospel presentation.
Would you please consider supporting Tomorrow Clubs at this time? Wonderful gospel ministry reaching the poorest of the poor in Eastern Europe. Please learn more. TomorrowClubs.org/wretched.
Let me share a sample from our latest evangelistic resource, The Man Who Split Time, 22 Proofs That Jesus Is God. Christianity is not a blind faith, it's an eyewitness faith. The Bible is a reliable collection of historical documents written by eyewitnesses during the lifetime of other eyewitnesses. The Man Who Split Time is perfect for any skeptic in your life. Whether it's for evangelizing, giving it to your agnostic friend, or handing out to your youth group, The Man Who Split Time will give you all the answers you need about the deity of Jesus Christ. For more awesome proofs that Jesus is God, all you have to do is visit wretched.org/time and order your copies of The Man Who Split Time, 22 Proofs That Jesus Is God. Get your copies today. wretched.org/time. That's wretched.org/time.
Whilst you and I perhaps cannot do much work, God has not been sidelined by a virus, and he is working and he is fulfilling his promise to build his church, even in Nepal.
So there are 65 Nepalese fellowships ranging between about 4,000 to 5,000 believers who worship the Lord every day. And we see conversion every day, literally every day, people are added to the church.
The Spirit of God continuing to convict of sin, righteousness, and judgment, regenerating believers, filling Jesus' churches. And these new believers, they need Bibles. Would you please participate in this great work and provide Bibles to new believers in Nepal and around the globe? It is merely $5 per Bible. How many could you send through Bible League International? You can do that at wretched.org/Bible.
Important dates in Christian history. 1517. Martin Luther posts his 95 Theses, a simple invitation for scholarly debate that inadvertently becomes a hinge of history. Luther's challenge to the sale of indulgences sparked the Reformation and changed the face of the world. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Anybody else smelling ecumenism in here? This is Wretched Radio. I'm pretty certain that is the odor emanating from The Chosen. Zoink Scoob, you feel free to watch whatever it is that you want to watch. Just thought you might want to be aware of the very popular making of, what would be the right word to say this? It's based on the Bible, but it's an embellished dramatization of different storylines regarding the life of Jesus Christ and the disciples. Produced by Dallas Jenkins. Of course, you know that name from Jerry Jenkins, the Left Behind fellow. He made this movie, and it is wildly popular. He recently did an interview on a Mormon talk show. Thought you'd be interested in knowing, Dallas Jenkins indicating a little bit of an ecumenical spirit here that I wouldn't say that it is these days overwhelmingly popular, but it is something that just doesn't seem to go away. Evangelicals who are willing to say, well, sure, Mormons, we differ, but sure, we Protestants have some differences with Roman Catholics, but this would be an example of that from Dallas Jenkins.
One of the most interesting things about this whole project has been my relationship with different denominational or faith traditions that I didn't have before. I've learned so much more about the LDS community than I thought I knew. But that goes for like the Catholic Church as well. Like this show has been uniquely, I've never seen anything like it really, how much it has unified in response multiple faith traditions. Now, once they get together, like on our fan club, there's still a bunch of arguments and shade being thrown at each other. Like
shade? I mean, essential theological differences.
People saying, oh, I'm in the same fan club or I love the same show as a bunch of Catholics. Well, I better tell them that they're going to hell, that they have a false religion, or vice versa. You get the Catholics saying, wait a minute, I need to inform our evangelical friends about how they're so wrong and blaspheming because they don't understand Mary. And what?
Well, actually, they would just say we do not possess the fullness of truth, but no problem in the end, as long as we respond to the inner light that we do have and do more good things, apparently, than bad things.
Funny about the LDS folks is you guys seem to be, even though you're the most controversial, you seem to be the least confrontational.
Well, that's not true. The LDS is actually the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, founded because they believed all of the other denominations or branches of Christianity were, say it with me, wrong.
It's just like, hey, we all love Jesus. Let's just, I just want to let you know we love the show. And when people start going, hey, you're a Mormon, you're going to hell. You just like, hey, whatever. It's like, it kind of seems to roll off your back. Maybe it's because you're used to being on the outside sometimes, but it's been so fascinating because even my family members, when we first started this relationship with VidAngel, part of it was, well, be careful because of the common misconceptions about our different belief systems, but also just protecting the show. Like, will the audience be bothered by the fact that there are LDS people involved?
Did you know that? Do now.
Personally, I didn't really care because I've worked with people of all different traditions, I've worked with atheists. I've partnered with people who've distributed my movies who had zero desire to, you know, or connection to Christ and couldn't have cared less about it.
I have too. You do too. You get your car washed, you partner with an atheist. You work on almost anything at the office, you're going to be partnering with pagans. That isn't exactly the issue. This is making a movie about Jesus and the author, the producer of it, saying, as far as being LDS or Roman Catholic, I used to think not so good, but now.
So even if I had significant disagreements with the LDS community, which I've learned I have fewer than I thought I did. But even with that, I was okay. I was comfortable with that because as long as they're treating the show properly, that's all that matters. So it's been, I can honestly say it's been one of the top three most fascinating and beautiful things about this project has been my growing brother and sisterhood with people of the LDS community that I never would have known otherwise, and learning so much about your faith tradition.
Brothers and sisters in the LDS community? Now, I know these days in common parlance, calling somebody brother, brah, kind of common. In this context, I'm assuming he's talking about in the faith. The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, who was founded stating, we have it wrong and they alone have it right, believing that Jesus is a created being, believing that the Father is also a created being, believing in a work-righteous system? I'm sorry. Those are essentials, and they're nice people, but brothers and sisters in the faith, they are not. Dallas Jenkins, producer of The Chosen, apparently he does.
And realizing, gosh, for all the stuff that maybe we don't see eye to eye on, that all happened, that's all based on stuff that happened after Jesus was here.
Yeah. Exactly. That's how theology was formulated more articulately. That's how councils got together to say, sorry, interloper, that ain't right. Of course it happened after Jesus.
The stories of Jesus we do agree on.
No, we don't. Jesus Christ is the divine Son of God. Jesus Christ repeatedly claiming deity. The Mormon Church doesn't believe that he's the divine Son of God. They believe he's the Archangel Michael. This isn't even warm, but this is the mere Christianity that I hear coming out. Hey, as long as we got Jesus in common, man, we just love Jesus, Daddy-O, so we're all good.
And we love the same Jesus. That's not something that you often hear. Sometimes it's like, they believe in a different Jesus than we do.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's the same. I mean, I'll sink or swim on that statement.
Well, then my friend, you sunk yourself, because the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints would tell you, we don't believe in the same Jesus. But this has been an effort of theirs for years. They used to want to be known as the Mormons. No, not anymore, because we don't want the baggage that comes with that. They used to say evangelicals are wrong. Now they're willing to say, no, we're just a mainstream evangelical sort of denomination. No, they're not. They've been after this for a long time, and sadly it appears, no, it doesn't appear, he just flat out said it, he's going to sink or swim believing that Jesus Christ in the Mormon Church is the same as the biblical Jesus.
Controversial, and I don't mind getting criticized at all for the show, and I don't...
Okay, it's not criticizing the show, sir. It's criticizing your position on the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
I'm being called a blasphemer. I don't like it when my friends are. And I've made it very clear that if I go down, I'm going down swinging, protecting my friends and my brothers and sisters. And so,
well, I guess that's your call. My encouragement for you would be to reconsider that, Dallas. Read their actual positions on these issues. Read what they teach about salvation not being by grace alone, faith alone, in Jesus Christ, the divine Son of God alone. Read what they teach about sola scriptura, another Protestant tradition, and essential. They've got multiple books, Pearl of Great Price, the Book of Mormon, Additional Revelation. That's outside of Protestant Orthodox Christianity.
I don't deny we have a lot of theological differences, but we love the same Jesus. And
there it is, mere Christianity.
And the guys at VidAngel are more passionate about this show. And I do hope that viewers judge the show on its own merits.
Like I said, you can watch the show or not. That's your call. That's not what this is about. This is about an individual who, by rubbing elbows working with Mormons, Roman Catholics, has been wrongly persuaded. We all believe the same thing about Jesus. And ultimately, all it takes, just believe in Jesus, and we're all brothers and sisters. No. No, we're not.
And much like when you read the Bible, you don't go, hey, I heard that the ink that was printed on this Bible was provided by someone I disagree with. And so there, or the driver of the truck who's delivering the Bibles to this church or this country.
That's not the concern, Dallas. How you got the movie done, that's not in view. It's that you are saying evangelicals and Mormons, evangelicals, Roman Catholics, brothers and sisters, and you're willing to, I do believe the term was, sink or swim. Brah. Read what they teach. Remember your Protestant heritage, faith alone, grace alone, in Jesus Christ alone, revealed in Scripture, not the magisterium, tradition, the Book of Mormon, Pearl of Great Price, in Scripture alone, for the glory of God alone. That was kind of a bummer. Until tomorrow, go serve your King.